Music Industry Insights. Hello, everyone. I'm Evan Murray. You can reach me at evan@musicindustryins.net. Write me an email. Let me know how you're doing. Let me know how you feel about the podcast. Do you have any questions or comments? This conversation today is a roller coaster. I'm not going to lie to you. For me, see, like the type of guy I am, I'd be interested in listening to this because it's about Mongolia. I have a lot of interest in Mongolia because I'm a person who loves history and likes to study history. So Mongolia is an obvious choice. Mongolia is a very unique country in the world based on its geographical location between China and Russia. And the, you know, political structure and all of the history with the warlords and taking over the world, the known world, and et cetera, et cetera. But this is about the music industry. And this is about the biggest festival in Mongolia. And this is about George. And George is what you'll hear in this podcast. He has a certain type of education. He went to the United States for his, you know, to get his university degree. And he is a mover and a shaker. And George is a real dude and he talks real talk. So if you're afraid of the F word or any kind of, let's say, street English, street language, now is the time to tune out. George is a real guy. He's passionate about music and about the music business and about events and about just being in the tangle of it. You can hear from him that he is tenacious and feisty, and he has a big personality as well. It's going to be interesting what's going to happen with Mongolia in the years to come, especially the information that you're going to hear here, because George is talking about some really interesting changes that are coming in 2022, and George is at the helm of it. So if you're going through Russia, Mongolia, if you're in this, or sorry, China, you know, the thing is Mongolia is there. Now, Mongolia does not have a big population. You know, almost the entire population of Mongolia lives in one city. And Mongolia is a vast, you know, it's a vast region. It's not a small country by any means. So this is very strange. Maybe it's got to do with the weather. Maybe it's got to do with the politics. I have no idea. You know, it's like weird when we look at Canada too. Like when you look at Canada, there's 38 million people in the second largest landmass on Earth. But then again, like, you know, 50% of that landmass, you can't live on it. Or if you did, you'd freeze to death, or you need to live in some kind of shelter. Regardless, I don't know if that's why Mongolia has a small population, but it does. Nevertheless, some of the most interesting music in the world comes from Mongolia, and so does some of the most interesting culture and food, even though George doesn't want to talk about food in this podcast, which I did because, you know, Mongolian food is everywhere in the world, Mongolian restaurants. So yeah, listen, you know, this podcast is a little bit more fun than your typical podcast. You know, there's beer drinking and there's swearing. And unfortunately, there's also some audio problems here. But, you know, I did edit it a bit, but I do want to still keep the integrity of the conversation. So, you know, deal with it. This is kind of more like a, you know, reality podcast than some of my business-oriented podcasts. But nonetheless, there is a massive amount of information for you to check out here. So, you know, take what you can from it, extract what you need, have a good time, and most of all, enjoy it.
All the way from Mongolia, he is the guy who runs the Playtime Festival, the biggest festival in Mongolia. And his name is George. And George, welcome. Thank you so much for spending some time with me today. Tell me about yourself. Come on, just let it go.
Yeah, you know, I'm fucked up, you know.
Cheers. One of us got coffee, one of us got beer. We're on a roll here.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you, Evan, for inviting me to your podcast. You know, hello, everyone. Greetings from Mongolia. You know, the COVID cases here are spiking, and I mean, and I had to postpone my festival to next year. Yeah.
Yeah, so that just, I just saw the news come out about that. So this is pretty sad, right? Like, you had to cancel the last one last year, and then this year this happens again. What is the detail surrounding that? So is this kind of pressure by the government saying, hey, like, we can't have people gathering like that? Like, what's happening there, George?
Yeah, I mean, it's like a two-way thing. I mean, from one side, it's the government.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, it's been already been close enough to the date. So I'm kind of glad that I postponed it.
Well, yeah. And I mean, that there's a lot of planning that goes inside of it. And then the postponement, that's so disappointing as well. Tell me how you got into this whole thing. Like, where did music start for you? How did it all, where did that all come from?
I mean, it all started in 1995 when I was like very young. I was a student, and I started a record store. So I set up the record store in Ulaanbaatar, and I started selling CDs.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's how it started, I wasn't much into like music at that time, but I kind of got it to it maybe a few years later. I got it to it very hardly, like addicted to music, you know, but it's been American alternative at that time. So, but then it shifted to British alternative, indie music. And I graduated from United States. I've been a student there, and I came to Mongolia. So I started doing a radio show. You know, I already had my record store running. So I started doing radio show. I started putting this alternative indie music on the radio show. At that time, there wasn't so much here. So, and then I opened a bar.
Okay, now you started. That's where it really starts.
So I opened a bar after I traveled to Germany. So I opened a bar in Mongolia, and it was a rock bar, the first rock bar here. So
wow. Okay, so let's go through this. So the thing is, like, you started in music by opening a record store. You were selling CDs. Started getting really into like the American music, the alternative scene kind of thing in the early 90s, yeah. Like kind of like that. And then, so, but you had your education in America. So how long did you live in the United States?
Not long. I mean, I started there for 2 years for my master's. You know, I'm an economist. Yeah, I'm an economist.
So. Oh, so okay. You're the perfect guy to be in the music industry.
No losses.
Yeah, at one time the music industry actually made money, right? So so you have this thing. So how was the living in the United States? Did that have a big impact on you culturally? Did it like, was that really like, did it kind of open your eyes a little bit, or was it everything you already expected?
No, of course it opened my eyes. So when I started there, I've been going to a record store. You know, I've been spending a lot of money on records. You know, I would spend like 3-4 hours there just looking through the records. And, you know, it actually influenced on my music taste, definitely. And, you know, it's been mainstream shit at that time. But, you know, so after I came back to Mongolia, I started a radio show. I opened the bar. So the bar was a rock bar. It was a very small bar, but nobody paid for the drinks. You know, they would drink outside and come in.
Oh, shit. That's not good.
So I had to close the bar after like 6-7 months, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
But how Playtime started is that there were bands who were playing every day at my bar. So there are like 4 or 5 bands. So when I closed the bar, I had to finish all the drinks, right?
Yeah.
So I called my friends and we drank like that for 2 days.
Awesome.
And then I thought, okay, you know, because I'm closing the bar, I want to do something with these bands, you know? So then I did a first edition of the festival in 2002 with these 4 bands. And it was like 300 audience, you know, like, you know, but it's how it started. And the second year I had like 15 bands, and the next year I had like 20 bands and so on. So now, I mean, it's been 20 years since I've been doing.
So this organically grew from people gathering together to have a good time, and it kept kind of multiplying from there. Now, I've heard a lot of stuff about the Playtime Festival, like from different artists I've talked to, and obviously like doing different work in Asia, Playtime has come up quite a bit. So I hear that it's kind of like a multi-functioning festival. Like it's like, there's a lot of stuff going on. Can you tell us some of the stuff that happens at Playtime Festival these days?
Yeah. Playtime Festival has been indoors maybe for 6-7 years. And I didn't have any venue in Ulaanbaatar who could like fit the people who wanted to see the Playtime. So I had to go outdoors. So I started outdoor version in 2008. And I did it for 2 days. I've been doing it for 2 days, outdoor summer camping festival. And I made it 3 days, I think maybe in like 2015 or 16, something like that. So, yeah, I mean, the Playtime Festival has been, as you said, very organic festival. Money has not been the goal. It's been always about the music. And the bands who are playing at the festival were like mostly new underground bands. Mm. I never invited popular bands. So it's been like mostly rock metal bands.
And with that happening, like, but people kept like, I guess the crowd kept getting bigger. Like people must have thought this was so what do you think, why do you think that happened? So you're just having independent bands starting out, but more and more people are amassing. What's happening there, George? Like, is this like the place to be? Is that what it's turning into?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think it's all about the music. It's been, you know, Mongolia is a developing country.
Okay.
And if you know our history, we've been a socialist/communist country till 1990. So we became a democracy from 1991. So as you see, I started the festival like 10 years into democracy, and the first 5 years into democracy were like really heavy because it's been a transition period, and a lot of families didn't have food, you know, because we've been supported by the Soviet Union, and Mongolia became independent, so we needed to make a transition to kind of be able to support ourselves, you know, as a country. So the first 5-6 years, it's been like the transition era. So we've been going through that shed time. And then at the beginning of the 2000, when I started the festival, things are becoming better in Mongolia, economically, you know, socially as well. So, the media, I mean, if you can imagine, you know, have been offering nothing, you know, in terms of music. And there have been like these stars who are playing the same thing. So Playtime was the platform for bringing out the new music, you know, because there's always new music, right? So kind of in terms of timing, you know, Playtime was able to offer a good stage for the Mongolian artists, you know, who are playing good music.
Do you think it was also a place for like local people to also like experience, you know, this thing, rock and roll? And is it really kind of like new? Was it new there like that? Like people going to a festival, were they like, wow, this is amazing? Or like, did you guys have lots of festivals already? Or were you kind of on the frontier here doing this kind of stuff?
Yeah. We've been on the frontier. We didn't have any festivals at that time. We didn't have any actually gigs here. So Playtime was something which started kind of a new movement, you know, kind of, I mean, it's been already in the other countries, in the European countries and United States, etc. But for Mongolia, you have to imagine the situation. Have been here, you know, it's a small country, you know, very few population, and there was nothing happening.
Let's talk a little bit about Mongolia, because I mean, being a foreigner, I don't really know a lot about it. I don't know how much people do. Like, the extent of my Mongolian knowledge is probably like the Khans, you know what I mean? Like the world famous stuff. I don't really know much about the country itself.
Yeah, nobody knows.
Well, no. But so there's one major city in Mongolia, right? That's Ulaanbaatar.
Yes.
And what? So the population of Mongolia is about, how? What is it, like 4 million or something?
No, it's 3 million.
3 million. I also heard that like a lot of the population lives in Ulaanbaatar itself, right?
Yeah, 50%. 1.5.
Okay, so it's a big city. Like, I mean, you know, I mean, by Canada standards, it's like a really big city, right? So, okay, so tell me a little bit about this. So you sound like you had a little bit of an international life as well. Like you went to school in the United States, you were going to Germany, you were having these influences. And do you feel like having those experiences was kind of making you like kind of like a worldly person that was bringing influences back into Mongolia?
Yeah, exactly. Of course that influenced me.
Okay.
Yeah, of course that influenced me. And also my business, you know, I started the record store in Ulaanbaatar, the first record store. So in a few years, I had like 15 stores. So, you know,
That was the first record store in your city. Yeah. Okay, yeah. Wow. Okay, so yeah, we really are talking about frontier stuff here. Can you tell me a little bit more, like, now I understand it's a democratic society and these things. Did the government like the idea about having Playtime? Did they see it as like maybe it could be a place that could draw tourism, like, you know, to Mongolia?
No. At that time, it wasn't even, you know, the government never thought about tourism at that time. It's been about surviving.
Right.
So only after like 12 years, government started supporting me, the UBCT mayor. But it was because of that person, the mayor of the city at that time in 2012-13 was a person who really loved the music, and he knew me, that I've been kind of promoting music. So he called me, he said, the city needs support Playtime, you know. Please come and see me, you know. So, but that was like after 12, 13 years. So the first years of the Playtime, it was no support, no, I mean, even the general population didn't know about the Playtime. It was only about these few audiences who really loved music, who liked rock music, who liked rock indie music. And, you know, after... you know, I had this my company with the record store, and then I opened a radio station in 2005.
Wow. Okay.
So I had this radio station, and you know what I did? I kind of really, really, you know, put all these different genres of music on the radio, And I had like 20 people doing all these different genres of music. And many bands of Mongolia now tell me that that radio station influenced them. So that in a way, I kind of made my audience. I made a festival and I made my audience, because the festival music wasn't popular at that time, you know. So it's kind of the process.
Works hand in hand a little bit, right? Like you had a record store, you had a rock bar, then you had a radio station, they have a festival. So you're really driving the spirit of rock and roll inside of Mongolia. And, you know, I guess it's starting to influence people. So they're like, if they check it out on the radio and then maybe they hear about this Playtime thing, these things are becoming associated. Playtime Festival has grown into a major festival now, though. So, like, you've really, this thing has gone from friends drinking and, you know, banging around into a major festival. So tell me about that transition. Like, how did you see that form and change? Like, how did you witness that evolution?
I mean, I never thought about it. I mean, it's been like, I don't know. I mean, like, I'm thinking back. And I mean, it became a major festival, but the process, you know, how it became, it's been like the most truest process ever, you know, and no money, no any media influence. It's just natural. So, but it's been all about the music. So I've been putting all these different bands on the radio station and people listening for the first time here in Mongolia. And bands been influenced, you know, so the teenagers who've been listening to radio, they started forming the bands, you know, and now our scene really grew big, and there are like a lot of different bands. And, you know, I don't know how to tell you. I mean, it took a lot of time to bring festival as it is, you know. I mean, people can make a big festival in a year and a few years, but for Playtime, it's been like the truest, like most organic evolution ever, I think.
That's really amazing, because I know, like, I've met bands at conferences and, like, you know, all the way from Mexico, Japan, like all, like bands from different parts of the world that have attended Playtime Festival too. So, like, I know that it has an international appeal as well. What do you think makes it have that international appeal? Like, why do you think bands are attracted to play that festival?
No, I mean, it's just...
Sorry. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, what do you think the international appeal is for bands coming into Playtime? Like, there's got to be something that's driving them there, right? Like, is it the atmosphere? Is it the fans? Like, I watch videos. I've been in person with your presentation. I mean, it looks amazing. Like, I think you have a lot of cultural aspect inside of it as well, too, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is a great atmosphere. The audience is the best. They really love music. And it's, I think, the most progressive youth attends the Playtime Festival. It's not even so well known within Mongolia, but still, like, the most progressive people attend the festival. But in terms of international bands, my first international band was in 2013. You know, after 13 years doing the festival, it's been local, it's been indoors, then become outdoors. It became a three-day festival. And then I had my first international band called Mono from Japan. They're a great post-rock band, you know. And so I had Mono in 2013 as my first international band. Their performance was great. And after that, you know, each year I've been, adding more international bands, etc. But really what drives us is the money. So you have to pay for the bands. I mean, we are not Coachella, we are not Glastonbury. Probably some bands would even go there for free just to perform there. But in terms of playtime festival, it's a totally 100% opposite story. Nobody knows about the festival. Nobody knows about the country. So I really had to pay money to bring them. I'm not telling that they charged me a lot of money, but that's how it started. So Playtime Festival is now becoming more well-known, and probably it will get easier to get well-known bands. But I had to pay extra money to bring, you know, international big names, because we have a competition at the same weekend. So in terms of to attend to Mongolia, I had to pay like for the travel to bring them from home and put them back home. They're not having Asian tour. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Just, yeah.
You know, it was much more difficult at that time, but now I'm learning. You know, I have a French agent who's helping me, and the bands who are coming, they already have like Asian tour. So it's becoming easier for me. But at the beginning, oh my God, you wouldn't believe how much money I paid to some bands to bring them here. I mean, like, as I told you, like from their home, from their bedroom to playtime and putting back to the bedroom, plus paying them fees.
Well, so, and I know that, like, one of the odd things about Mongolia too, it's crazy expensive to fly there versus anywhere else. You know, like, I mean, it's like even if I'm in Taiwan, for me to fly into Mongolia is like as expensive as it is to fly to, like, you know, New York for some reason. I don't know why, but
yeah. I mean, talking about the infrastructure, et cetera, everything's difficult here. Everything's difficult, but, you know, because of Playtime Festival, I want to bring really good bands, and I want the youth here to listen to them live. And, you know, I mean, but I never kind of thought it's been hard for me. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I managed to do it, you know.
Well, are you working? Would you say like you're working from a place of passion? So it's like, it sounds like you have a lot of obstacles. So maybe these obstacles are even making you stronger and stronger, you know, your whole entire plight in order to like really share this spirit with people, right? Like it's kind of like you're on a mission almost. Is that fair to say that?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is kind of a mission. And as you told, I mean, this is all about the passion for the music, what is driving it. I had losses most of the time. I mean, I only got break even in 2019. Can you imagine, like, after 16, 17 years? And I had another business who, you know, helped me to cover the losses. But I've been doing it because of the passion, because I really want to, you know, take care of the youth here, you know, like, of these people who really love music.
Well, let's be straight about it too. Like, I mean, like when kids get involved in music, they don't have time for street fighting. They don't have time for street gangs. They don't have time for drugs. They don't have time for a lot of things. Like, I mean, getting into a band, dedicating yourself to a worthy cause, I mean, it keeps people out of trouble. You know, it really does. And I mean, if a band gets good, they can also become ambassadors for a country. You know, if a band gets really good, they get really tight, and you send that band to another country and they do well. I mean, this is like, you know, how you also kind of share your culture and share, you know.
Like the story you were telling is like probably for the major country or major, you know, we don't have gangs here. We don't have drugs here, actually.
Okay.
Well, it's true about the music. You know, it's much more peaceful here, man. Okay. So they're just doing it, you know. They're probably bored here.
Oh my God. Well, hey, now we're learning more, right? Learning more about Mongolia. Oh my God. Good. Well, that's good, man. You guys are doing a good job raising the kids, right?
They're just bored, believe me. I mean, that's the proper word. They're just bored here.
Oh, my God. And what about to yourself? I want to just talk about you a little bit here more. So running this radio station, like, what kind of commitment was in that? Like, were you... Did you take up space on the FM dial when you were doing this? Like, was this kind of a...
No.
Okay.
No. My company, we bought a license for the new radio station. So we established a totally new radio station, and we did the radio for 5 years, and then we sold it, you know, because someone offered like a lot of money. Because the station was very successful.
You built something. You built something out of nothing.
Exactly. Yeah. We built it. We didn't, took someone's station, etc. But we built it, I had a partner who wanted to sell. I never wanted to sell, but you know, he wanted to sell because someone offered like a lot of money for it. It was like probably 50-60% above the market rate at that time. So we sold it in 2010. So we established the radio in 2005, and we sold it in 2010. It was called Haifa Radio. I mean, it's been a kind of, in a way, a legendary radio here in Ulaanbaatar, which, as I told you, helped to bring new bands and help to shape up the audience for the Playtown Festival. I mean, I'm talking in terms of the music taste. It's smart.
Cultivating an audience, right? Yeah.
But now Playtown is becoming like this huge festival in Mongolia. Like, everybody knows it. Everybody wants to come to it. Like, all these sponsors wants to give me the money, etc. But it took 20 years.
So yeah, you put a good part of your life into this to build something, and like, congratulations.
I enjoyed it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, what an accomplishment, right? Like, honestly, what an accomplishment. So the thing is, like, and I mean, this is such a great story because, like, I mean, it's something really I think Western people really need to appreciate, is that you started something from nothing, you know, like, you had a love for music, and that love for music led you into business, you know, like trying to share that with people. And I mean, like, 20 years of trying to do one thing that's pretty amazing, man. Like, that's a lot of focus. That's a lot of determination. Like, you must have seen the possibility. Like, you must have seen, like, hey, this, something amazing can really come out of this. Will you continue to grow the international aspect of the festival itself?
Yes. Actually, my goal is to make Playtown Festival one of the biggest festivals in Asia.
Wow.
I need like a huge land.
Yeah.
And I'm already working on it. Like, I need to have this huge 300 hectare land, which is like 2.5 kilometers into 2 kilometers, like 1.5 kilometers. So,
wow.
So when I will get that land, I will make a festival which will have like 150,000 people. So,
oh my God. Wow.
That's my goal.
Well, you know what, man? I mean, how much is the attendance you have right now? I'm just curious. I don't even know.
I have 30,000 attendance right now.
I mean, that's not a small number. Like, you say it like, well, 30,000, that's not a small number at all. That's a pretty big festival as it is. So, I mean, do you have plans surrounding the festival? Like, are you going to, is there like ideas for camping and like to make it like a tourism thing where people can come from the world? And
I mean, you know, the festival which impressed me much was Coachella. So I went to Coachella two times, and I've been impressed by the festival, the sites organization in a way, you know. I don't like when it's too huge. You know, I don't like it when it's too small. Like for me, Coachella Festival, you know, I thought that it was like really, really perfect size. It was like really perfect organization, like 7-8 stages. I mean, so my goal is I want to make Asian Coachella here. And, you know, I will do these car camping sites. You know, this land probably 50% will be for camping, car camping. You know, so that people will come with their cars and with their tents. So, yeah, I mean, I'm going to do it, and I will make it the festival with 150,000 people. And I will bring my favorite world star bands, you know, because I'll be able to afford it at that time, you know.
Okay, so this is going to grow. Now, this is, I mean, but this is where this gets interesting, because when you start talking about the crowd amassing and growing, and you start talking about bringing major bands, this becomes something super special for independent bands that can get inside as well. So will you still keep the independent element of this as in your future?
I mean, this is like the soul of the festival. The soul of the festival has always been the new bands, the new music of Mongolia. You know, as I told you, I never invited big names, you know, because first of all, I don't like their music.
Right. And then, it gets old fast, yeah.
No, I mean, you know, about the Mongolian scene, I mean, how to explain it to you? I mean, there have been very few good bands. I mean, the scene is not as big as in other countries. You have to imagine it. But the new bands, they've always been bringing the new sound. You know, so I built the festival on shoulders of this new sound, the new bands in Mongolia. And there are bands who've been playing at the festival for 15, 16 years nonstop.
Wow.
And they now and they now became popular bands here. They became well-known bands here. So I will never kind of become this ugly person who would like kind of forget the roots, etc. So I will always keep this spirit. I will always keep the spirit of the new bands, of the new sound, of the new music. And I will bring well-known bands. So it will be this beautiful, beautiful fusion of new and well-known, you know, kind of balance, you know. So it's all about the balance. Yeah.
Now I got to do this, and I, you know, don't hate me, but I'm going to steer left for a second. There is a really, really like famous band from Mongolia that like, I mean, really kind of went viral in the last, you know, years, right? And they're called The Who, or the...
Yeah.
Like, is that something that's authentically Mongolian? When people are watching that, are they really seeing something that's like from the heart of Mongolia?
Yes, it is. The Who, I mean, they became viral like last year, or maybe last 2 years. I mean, but they've been produced by the American label.
Oh, okay.
But their music is truly authentic and Mongolian music. I mean, they really make Mongolians proud. And it's probably the first band who really became international. I mean, we have stars here, but they're not international. They're local, you know? It's
like, yeah, yeah.
Probably like in most Asian countries. But The Who, they really kind of really fused Mongolian traditional music with the metal sound, and I mean they're huge international. They've been invited to these big festivals, you know. But my taste is different. I mean, I respect The Who, but my taste is different. I love other bands. You know, there are a lot of bands who are like, but they never became international. They're all local. So. I mean, it's really difficult to break through to United States or England, you know, for any Asian band, right? I mean, it's not easy. but it's becoming more flatter. I mean, because of the internet, etc., and you know, digital revolution. But for the Who, I mean, they had this really brilliant producer called Dashton Dog. He's already been famous artist in Mongolia, but he, as I know, dedicated his probably 10 years to develop this idea of Hunnu rock. And he is the one who established the Who. So I respect him for that. And he signed a deal with the American label, who really helping him to make them international.
Yeah, because I mean, when I came across them, it was something, you know, it was kind of shocking. And I think a lot of people really felt like, wow, like this is like powerful. And I mean, the thing is, the world history of Mongolia has a lot to do with, like, you know, war and, you know, the power and these. Yeah, yeah, man. So, I mean, like the imagery and the music really was powerful stuff, man, you know. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like everybody thinks that in order to get to America or, you know, the Western world, you need to kind of bring this local authentic thing, right? Like, so I mean, that's the formula everybody knows. But the Who, I mean, they really did it. They really kind of brought this Mongolian spirit to the music and the sound to the music, and really made a great music. But as I told you, I'm not the fan.
Right. So they won't be at Playtime anytime soon, right? They won't be at Playtime. They won't be playing at Playtime anytime soon.
Actually, in Mongolia, we have like 20, 30 bands like who sounds like the Who. You know what I mean?
Okay, the secret is out.
Yeah. I mean, no, you have to understand it from the lot of people. Like, we have this, a lot of Who's here. Like, probably there is actually even better band than the Who.
Right.
Who is like really doing jazz music with the traditional music, like really great band. I mean, there are a lot of bands like this.
Let's talk about, I want to talk to you a little bit, dive into a little bit about traditional. And I mean like traditional Mongolian music. Now, I know that you're more focused on rock and the Western, like the spirit of rock and stuff, but does Playtime have a little bit of like traditional Mongolian music to it? I know you have traditional food places. I've watched the videos. Like, you have some kind of events too for the horse riders. Like, do you have something like that? And then you have the traditional food. So you are focused on Mongolian culture. You are proud of Mongolia and you want the world to know about Mongolia. What is Mongolian music, traditional music like? What is it like? Like, were they playing, what kind of instruments were they playing? What kind of songs were they singing?
I really don't know the names.
Yeah, don't worry.
We had like throat singing, like this horse fiddle, we have the traditional instruments and somebody can Google it.
Yeah, of course.
You know, I really don't know much about it, you know.
But it's cool.
Okay. There are a lot of people here who, you know, play Mongolian music, traditional music, etc., you know.
Yeah,
but for me, like, my focus is the world, you know. Especially if you think, like, when the country is so small, nobody pays attention to it.
Mm.
We pay attention, you know what I mean? We pay attention outside. But when the country is big, everybody pay attention to it. They don't want to pay attention outside, you know, kind of if you think logically, you know. So in terms of Mongolia, we are like a very small country with a very few population, but we are democracy. Everybody has access to internet, you know, and most of the very good education here. Most of the youngsters, they speak English.
Okay.
So you have to understand the dynamics here. It's like everybody knows what's happening in the world. You know what I mean?
Right.
But nobody pays attention to us. You know?
Okay. Now let me ask you a little bit about that. So Are you interested to say, like, you know, there's export offices all over the world, right? Like, there's export offices in all over Canada, Asia, Europe.
My favorite is French export office. Yeah.
Okay. So, and, you know, and that's, well, Benjamin actually speaks Russian too. Yeah. So you and Benjamin.
Yeah, exactly. When you he's my drinking buddy, Benjamin. Yeah. Love him. And when you drink Russian, because I finished Russian high school. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So you guys sit and drink and speak Russian together. Is that, yeah?
Yeah. We speak Russian. We drink vodka. Yeah?
That's awesome, man. Yeah. Cool. Benjamin's a great guy.
Actually, I bring, every time I meet Benjamin, I bring Mongolian vodka to him. You know what Mongolia has is good vodka. So,
okay.
Now we have like really, really good vodka here. Yeah.
So that's good to know too. See, now I'm learning all these things about Mongolia today.
I also bring to my Korean friends, like, you know, Dalse. You know, I always bring to Dalse and Jihan from The Strange Fruit in Seoul.
Okay.
So I bring them vodka every time I go to Seoul, you know. They like Mongolian vodka.
And are you, so is there, okay, so you say, yeah, I like the French export office. Are you like considering like having, how many stages are at Playtime right now? Like when you're planning this in the future, like, is there just one main stage or is there like one main and some small ones?
No, I mean, at the Playtime in 2019, we had 10 stages.
Wow.
Like, okay. Small and the bigs. Yeah. So the major, so there are like two big stages. The biggest one is the main stage and another one is electronic stage. We have like a very big electronic stage.
Okay.
The most, yeah, all the best DJs in Mongolia, they perform at Playtime Festival as well. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. And I mean, I can kind of see it being a little bit of an international, like, you know, when we're talking about growing, because I mean, your focus is the world. You have all of these ideas and thoughts about, you know, the influences that you've brought in. And I'm wondering, would export offices have an opportunity to have a stage at your festival? Like, is that possible? If, say, like you had a country festival kind of thing?
You know, actually, when I will get a new land, when I will like enough space, I will kind of have a world music stage. You know, that's kind of the thing which I'm already thinking. I really want to bring African bands, Latino bands.
Wow.
You know, all this, you know, Middle East music, etc. So I will have the world music stage and I will work with the export. And I already work with the export offices, but I will do it when I have a new land, probably in 2-3 years. But now it's really about the modern music and it's about the youth here. You know what they want, what they're doing. You know, Playtime Festival was a rock metal music festival, I think, till 2015. And in 2015, I introduced the electronic stage. And I introduced the first hip hop bands in 2019.
Okay.
So Playtime is slowly becoming a music festival. It's been a rock music festival. Now it's becoming a music festival. And, you know, we have to do it because, you know, rock is dead, you know?
Boom, there it is.
Yeah. Cool. You know, probably the best album I heard this year was Black Midi, you know. Black Midi's new album. Do you know the band called Black Midi?
I actually don't, but I will check it out.
Check them out. I'm a huge fan of them. I've been listening to the album. It's been great. And you know, it's like fewer albums every year. I mean, in terms of rock indie genre, which are good, you know. So, you know, the golden era has already gone. So now it's all trap music or hip hop music, all these different bedroom pop shit, you know, like, I mean, the music is changing. I mean, personally, I don't like it, but because I'm a festival organizer, I have to keep up with it.
You know? Yeah, it's like leaving the lifestyle, what I noticed. Like people are using music now more for like, you know, just doing everyday activities. Like the lifestyle is kind of changing. And that's the sad part, because it's a culture. Like that music is a global culture. Like we do the same things. Like if you live in Canada or Sweden or China or Mongolia, like if you're listening to rock and roll and influenced by rock and roll, you're kind of having a similar type of ideas and lifestyle too, right? So, yeah. I mean, music is a culture to itself. Now, I got to ask you a question about, do you have any interest in like the export of Mongolian music itself? And I don't mean traditional, I mean just bands. Do you have any interest in getting Mongolian bands out there in the world?
Yes, of course. I mean, that's one of my major goals, is to really bring out Mongolian bands to the world.
Wow.
And actually, in 2019, my dear friend, James Miner from South by Southwest, he actually supported me, and I did Mongolian at SXSW 2019 for the first time.
Wow.
I brought three bands.
Wow. Okay. You brought
So there are 20 people. Yeah.
So tell me about that experience, really, guys. Tell me about the experience of you and the artist.
Oh, I mean, I went to SXSW, I think in 2017 or I don't remember, but I went there, and before that, I became friends with James Miner, my friend, who's really, really, you know, good person, who's always, you know, looking out for others. So I went there, I kind of really, really, you know, I kind of had good time. And then I saw all these different nights, like Korean night, Taiwanese night, like UK night. So all these different countries been doing their gigs, SXXX. So I wanted to do Mongolian one. So I did it. No support from government, nothing.
What?
Everybody paid the tickets. Yeah, I paid for that. I had to pay for all this, you know, for all this equipment. You know, it's been like, I paid a lot of money for that, you know, in a way.
No kidding. And you're representing, you're repping Mongolian culture, society, and you're doing it right out of your pocket.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Really?
Yeah. So that was first Mongolian night. And I did it with the title. I did it with the pie, you know, pie and I, we did it on one stage because we had to share, you know, we had to share the expenses, and pie did it. I did it. You know, we have this cool poster, you know, with this, with the lineup, three Thailand bands, three Mongolian bands, Mongolian Thailand nights, you know?
Wow. I can really see also like Playtime Festival being something, because I mean, a lot of the funding, what's happening in Canada right now, just to mention this, is turning into this thing called like, you know, tourism and touring. So the thing is like, we're recognizing that, you know, touring can be a lot of aspect for people to understand tourism and learn about, you know, other countries and so on. And I think Playtime Festival is super attractive for not only like, you know, what you're doing, but the experience. And also if people were to travel with artists to go there and kind of, you know, camp at this place and experience Mongolia itself as a country.
Exactly.
Because it sounds like you really have an experience when you go there, you know, like, looking at the pictures, like how you have it set up, like there's all these tents and stages and activities. It really sounds like, it really seems like it's a, how many days does it last? How many days is the festival itself?
Yeah, I mean, the Playtime Festival is 3 days, but next year I'm going to do it for 4 days.
Okay.
Next year I'm going to start festival on Thursday evening. And everybody will go home on Monday morning. So it's 4 days, four nights next year. But before that, it's been 3 days, three nights. And it's about the music tourism. Actually, one of the reasons why I'm doing the festival at the beginning of July is related Mongolian big celebration called Nadam. So Nadam is July 11th. So Playtime Festival is weekend before Nadam. So Playtime Festival is perfect for music tourism. It's perfect because you can see Playtime and then after a few days, you can see Mongolian Nadam. It's wrestling, horse racing, it's archery. So our three main sports.
Wow.
Okay. So, and you can see the beautiful Mongolian countryside, etc., of course. So, I mean, the reason I'm doing Playtime before now, actually, just to make, to kind of really make it attractive for music, too, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That sounds something that, I mean, I'm sold. I want to come. Like, that's something I want to do for sure.
Yeah, yeah, please
have a maybe I can invite some Canadians and Swedes with Swedish people. With
yeah,
you.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, yeah,
bring your Sweden friend.
Yeah.
What's his name?
Oh, well, yeah. That's a complicated assortment now. Yeah, no,
bring your Indian friends too.
Oh yeah, for
100%. You do stuff in India, right?
Yeah, I do. So, I mean, this is really interesting. So, I mean, when it comes into this festival and the way that you're like kind of growing it, I really do think this is going to be a part of tourism. And actually, I'd like to even talk to people on that fact of the tourism. So, this festival that you're talking about, so you have the festival and then there's a really special cultural event that's the next weekend. And is this celebrating the Mongolian culture then? Because you're talking about the main sports. Like, tell me about that a little bit.
No, actually July, Mongolian, you know, kind of, yeah, how to say it? It's July 11th is... the day when Mongolia kind of became truly independent.
So it's like Mongolian independence.
It's kind of our independence day in a way, yeah.
So it celebrates the entirety of it.
The history is complicated. You know, we have different independence day, but you know, July 11th is the day when Mongolian become socialist country. You know, it's like it's you know, there has been fight over Mongolia to make it like capitalist, to make it like socialist. So the Russians won it for Mongolia. You know, so Mongolia has always been independent from Russia, but Russian has been for 70 years. 70 years till 1990 when we become truly democratic country. So I mean, I'm not good at history. So July 11th, you know, it's like our biggest celebration.
We'll Google it. We'll Google, because that sounds interesting.
Yeah, please Google it. You know, it's complicated to explain. You know, something related with the party.
Okay? Right. And well, I mean, no, it does sound like something significant. It sounds like, you know, the festival. And tell me about Mongolian food. Do you concentrate a lot on the food itself? Because, I mean, there's Mongolian restaurants all over Canada, all over the world. There's Mongolian restaurants. So do you guys cater to that food culture in the festival as well?
We are not good at food.
Okay.
We are really not good at food. All this is marketing. It's all marketing. No, we have some like kind of traditional foods, but I think it's all China, you know, in a way.
Okay.
truly, Mongolian food is like meat made on fire, you know, like.
Well, what so else that's like you ask
truly
for?
Nomadic, you know? Nomadic barbaric food. You know, nomadic barbaric food is truly Mongolian food.
Awesome. That's great. That's my favorite kind. All right, George. So let's summarize this all together here. You've been working on the Playtime for 20 years. It's going to continue. You're growing it. You want to collaborate more and more with international people. You want to collaborate more and more with international acts. And you want to get Mongolian acts out there as well. I wonder, yes. Is there, like, are you open to trade? Are you open for trades? Like where, say, like you work, like say you work with a conference like Live at Heart for hypothetical, you know, something, yeah, are you interested in doing like a trade of 3-3 or something of that kind of nature?
Of course, always, always. I mean, you know, I'm a grower, you know. You know, I want to grow, I best want to grow, I want Mongolia to grow. So I'm open to anything.
Okay.
As I told you, small country, nobody pays attention to us. So I have to do it for Mongolia. I mean, government is doing shit. So I have to do it. And I have ability to do it. I have friends all over the world. You know, I have networks. Yeah. So yeah, I'm really open to that. I mean, I really want Mongolian bands to travel world. You know, I want to bring international bands to Mongolia so that people see. I told you, Mongolia is fucking bored, you know?
Yeah, it's great. Well, I hope also with the international community that you have and serving your people, you know, in your own country, I hope that with your international contacts, that people can come together and maybe support you or maybe give you letters so that maybe the government can be more convinced to get on board with what you're doing. I mean, it sounds like you should have that support. You should. The things that you're doing, you know? So
yeah, actually that's like very good, which I'm making. One of my kind of big next project, I'm kind of working on a new project, is to establish in Mongolia the Mongolian Music International Conference and Showcase Festival. So
Is it going to be separate than the Playtime?
It's separate from Playtime. Playtime is a camping 3-day festival like Glastonbury or Coachella. It's all about the music.
Yeah.
But the music conference and showcase festival, which I'm to do next year, hopefully, with the support from the government, will be invite dear friends to Mongolia. All delegates, including
amazing. You, thank you.
Amazing.
Mongolia, and really do a showcase of 20 who's.
Who is who?
You know, but the delegates will see that it's not only the who, there are a lot of good hip hop bands, a lot of good bands. Yeah.
I saw one of your hip hop bands at the Golden Melody Awards in Taiwan, and that was
Yinjing.
I mean, he's got a massive following online.
He is. He's a superstar. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, my little brother. Okay. Yeah. So Ginjing, and there are a lot of hip hop artists who are really talented, a lot of brilliant bands, and a lot of bands who play traditional music with the jazz, with the rock, with metal, etc. So I'm going to do this showcase festival hopefully next year with the support from the Minister of Culture. We have this new Minister of Culture and
amazing,
really young, energetic woman who is sister of culture. She's really, really progressive woman.
Well, man, so this is so already, exciting. You know, this is so
she's
exciting.
Already in talks with me doing this. So I need to do it next year. I'm going to invite my beautiful delegate friends from all the world, showcase the bands, and I will send 20 to 30 Mongolian bands for the world next year. So
well,
yeah, so this is
I'd love to see you in